From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nam. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a contributing writer for Washington City Paper. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Later in the broadcast, we'll be talking with Carl Racine. He is the Attorney General for the District of Columbia, who won big in his re-election campaign after last week's voting. Joining us in studio now is Katie Crystal, chair of the Arlington County Board. She's a Democrat. Katie Crystal, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm delighted to be back. Good afternoon.
Tom Sherwood, Maryland Attorney General Brian Frush is going to the Supreme Court, or is asking the Supreme Court, to review a decision that was made last week unanimously by a special three-judge panel that said that Democratic mapmakers violated the First Amendment rights of Republican voters in Maryland. This is not the first time Attorney General Frush is going to the Supreme Court on this issue, and there are those, like Governor Larry Hogan, who says, look, just go ahead and change the thing. Let's have an independent commission decide on these districts.
Well, the 6th district, which is the heart of this case, is a poster child for gerrymandering, admitted so by the Democrats, actually, if you talk to them. The Attorney General wants the court to review this because there are some attorneys general around the country who would actually like the Supreme Court to address this. There are many states that have gerrymandering issues in court cases.
And they would like Katie Crystal's state be one of them?
Yes, Virginia would be one of them. But
indeed.
But Arlington is not affected by the current case. But they want some changes. The problem some people see is if the state has to follow the rules and have a new districts, congressional districts drawn by March 7th, which is a court deadline, well, then you could end up having new districts drawn for 2020. And then after you do the census, you could have the districts change again. So it could be that Mr. Frosch is thinking if he keeps the court case alive, maybe they won't have to change it for 2020 and then simply change everything for 2022. But
as I said, there are similar problems in the Commonwealth of Virginia, where Attorney General Mark Herring is proposing a package of legislation aimed at combating hate crimes and reining in white supremacist violence. But Tom Sherwood, this is the third year in a row he has sought to introduce such legislation, and the Republican majority General Assembly has rejected both of his previous attempts. What do you makes him more optimistic this time around?
Well, one, he believes in the legislation. Whether it passes or not, it frankly is good for him in terms of both his personal views and his political views to stake out a claim on this. You know, the FBI says that hate crime reporting is up something like 17% across the country, and that's without requirements that hate crimes be reported. So how many there are, we don't know, but we know they're up in virtually every jurisdiction. Many people blaming the tone and tenor of the Trump administration. And so he wants the state to address them. Chances of it happening. No, no, you know, the great thing about Virginia is that we had this big election this year, but the big election is next year when all 140 seats of the legislature are up, the 100 seats in the House, the 40 seats in the Senate. All of them will be on the ballot. And in 2017, just last year, the Democrats came within a whisker of taking control of the House. So all these matters, whether it's hate crime legislation, whether it's Trump in the White House, the Democrats still think this blue wave can go forward, and I think this is part of it.
And do you think, Katie Crystal,
she's nodding her head.
Because of what just happened in the last election, do you think it is possible that the mood in the General Assembly might be changing somewhat despite the fact that it still has a Republican majority?
I will say that I have learned to not speculate about what the General Assembly might do on the upcoming session. So it will be interesting to see, you know, whether thoughts of November characterize or color the maybe more bipartisan or moderate legislation coming out of the General Assembly. But I will say, as Tom was indicating, it's going to be an interesting election year. And I've been saying I wouldn't count against Virginia women in particular after the 2017 results and then the congressional results.
Which brings me to my next issue, and that is, what do you think will be happening in the Virginia delegation to the Congress of the United States? Because for the first time in history, there are now three women in that delegation at the same time.
What a milestone, right? This is really exciting. And much actually like some of the candidates who won in their House of Delegates races in 2017, what's exciting is not just the gender, but the background these individuals bring and how substantive they are. You know, the background of military service or analyst service and the smarts and the talent. I think it's going to be a delegation that really does right by the people of the Commonwealth who are really highly educated themselves.
I think that was a significant aspect of the background, people with military or substantial CIA kind of background that gives more heft to people. That the Democrats in the past, it's been more of a Republican thing where the military veterans run and were more conservative, when in fact that's not an accurate characterization.
That's absolutely
of
right.
Military families. Right. And the families suffer often the worst in the issues of that face military families.
Can I
ask the first question?
Yes.
This is the most important question of all.
I know what this. I can guess what's coming. Go ahead.
National landing.
I knew it.
I mean, I realize Crystal City. Correct me if I'm wrong. The idea is that it's called Crystal City because one of the first buildings done there, when it was being redeveloped, there was a big crystal chandelier in the lobby of the building. But you know, that's the legal name of it, area, right?
That's
it shows up on the maps and all of that. National Landing. We've got National Harbor, pseudo place there on the river. We've got the nation's capital, and now we're going to have, you know, we've got Reagan National Airport. National Landing is the best they can do. What do you think of it, now that I've given my opinion?
Well, so let me first say the name Crystal City, as the official name, as you were just saying, right, as our what's on our metro station, what's on our maps, what people refer to the neighborhood, that name's not going away. It's not being replaced. And I have a particular affinity for Crystal City myself, having lived there when I first got to the county. And I always say I've been proud to share a name with the neighborhood to some extent myself. the National Landing is a shorthand, really, of being able to speak to three different and discrete neighborhoods crossing two different municipalities, right? Mm-hmm. It was an effort by our economic development staff, I know, as well as the development interests in that area, to be able to brand across neighborhoods in a compelling way. What they liked about National Landing, and I think to come at least in part to its defense, right, is that idea of connection, of taking off even. You know, you certainly get the connection to the airport, which connects you to the rest of the world, but also the increased connectivity that you're going to see through things like the transit way, right? Through things like bringing Route 1 to grade and creating more walkability, this real sense of connection of ideas, of people, of movement across these areas. That at least was what the name was hoping to inspire, but I recognize it's been a little bit of a punching bag. It's had National Land has had a hard
The record show that I'm one of the people who don't have much of a problem with the name.
Do you call it Reagan National Airport or National Airport?
It depends. on who I'm talking to. That's a completely political decision.
Well, it is that you drive down one there and you get to Potomac Yards, mm-hmm. where the good news is that Southern Station for Metro apparently is part of the deal
really
to bring that back.
Alexandria.
That's really important for a variety of people. But, you know, that's where the Redskin Stadium was going to be. And then people said, oh, we don't want all that traffic on Sundays down here. Of course, they have all that traffic 7 days a week. But it is kind of a jumble of buildings now with no clear stop and start. If you can work it out. But then you're going to have this walkway to the National Airport. It's going to be like 300 yards long.
This is such an exciting development that I think could be pushed
Everybody
forward.
Who lives in the region would like to know how that
works. Crystal City should know has been described as a semi-vacant failed experiment of a neighborhood with a puppet store. That was Benjamin Frieda, local editor and reporter, who added in a piece for Slate, no one is going to miss it. Well,
That's I think that's what the kids would call a sick burn, right?
Yes.
As I said, I'm partial to Crystal City, having lived there myself.
And having the last name Crystal, even though it's not spelt the same way.
Spelled differently, but I there's a lot to recommend Crystal City now. It's got some good public spaces. It has a lot of residents who call it home, as well as those indeed vacant office buildings. And I think best of all, and I think what Amazon's decision reflects, is that there is an incredible vision for that neighborhood that's been developed by the community in response to and anticipation of the consequences of BRAC nearly a decade ago. And this is a chance to really realize that vision.
Well, that nightmare getting to Reagan National Airport earlier in the last week was already horrible. So tell us, this 300-yard, 3-football-field-long walkway, is it going to be covered? Is it just going to be a – is it just –
So we are at the early stages of this idea. I will tell you, on a personal note, I am one of the people for whom this idea is so exciting. I think this is transformative, right? The ability for people, business travelers, visitors to the region, tourists, and residents to be able to just walk, right? Not
walk
have to get in
300 yards.
It's incredible, right? So
sound incredible. If you've got like small children, or is there going to be any kind of, there's no tramway or anything, it's just going to be a walkway.
At this point, the concept is just a pedestrian bridge.
If you have two small children, or if you have someone in an infirm person.
They take 3 steps to my one, yes.
What I was going to suggest, though, with regard to your excellent questions about the exact form it will take, we are in the preliminary envisioning stages of it. I should note this is going to require quite a few partners in the mix. The National Park Service will need to be involved. Certainly the MWA, the Airports Authority, as well as the jurisdictions like Arlington. Our Crystal City BID, Business Improvement District, has been a great thought leader on this, has developed a couple of renderings.
Leader.
Well, that's right, helping push forward the idea in any event. They've created
Kojo
some renderings.
Our thought leader.
Yeah, right.
As recognized by the city paper.
Yeah,
okay, well, I think that's going to be interesting, the concept of how it would work, because there's so many people, I go to Reagan National every time I possibly can to fly because I don't like going out to Dulles.
That's right. And if I can, just one other thing about the pedestrian bridge that I think is a great example of how these kind of big visionary economic development projects actually really serve the interest of current residents. Mm-hmm. We have real challenges in the neighborhood surrounding the airport with regard to, they recently changed where the Ubers and Lyfts drop off their employees. It's caused traffic backups.
Right.
If you can have more people journeying from Crystal City to the airport on foot, that is not only going to be a great milestone for the businesses in the area, but it's also going to improve the lives of our current residents in terms of reducing that congestion on their streets.
Well, let's look at the big picture. The company, Amazon, is planning to invest $2.5 billion in National Landing over the next decade, hiring workers, renovating buildings. What can we expect from that investment?
I think what we'll eventually expect over time, and it is important to talk about this over time, right? This is a ramp up of 10 years or more. And so we should not expect shovels in the ground tomorrow, for example. But I do think as that ramp up continues, first we'll see the occupancy of some existing buildings in Crystal City and some improvements to the facades and structures around them as the first wave of Amazon employees come. From there, we'll see likely the realization of some entitled projects, some site plans around potentially the Metropolitan Park area, which is probably most famously known as the site of South Arlington's Whole Foods right now, and potentially the Penn Place development. What's exciting to me about that is the potential not only to see these buildings go up, but to realize some of the community benefits that have been envisioned. A major park, for example, a big green space for the community as part of that Metropolitan Park development. And then when you start to get into some of the other investments that Arlington and the state is making, the realization of some major transportation infrastructure goals, like the second entrance to the Crystal City Metro.
What may I ask about housing? Because you're already hearing people say that
we got a tweet from Anna who says, as a new Arlingtonian and Commonwealth employee, I'm not making an Amazon salary and don't own a car. I literally can't afford to move out to Loudoun or Centerville. I've only been in the area 6 months, but now wonder if I'll be able to stay, and I want to.
Right, and because already real estate agents are saying the inquiries about renting apartments, maybe prices are even already going up. Is there any affordable housing aspect of this?
Absolutely. And I think it's worth talking both structurally, what we'll be doing over time, and also the immediate impacts that folks like Anna are most worried about. But on the structural side, there's some major new investments in affordable housing matching our ongoing investments in affordable housing. So part of that overall package that we've talked about is a commitment of $7 million a year from Arlington County in the creation of committed affordable units that by covenant stay affordable to people
making. workforce housing
exactly.
when you say affordable? It's not.
Well, it depends, right? So the development, or excuse me, the restrictions on each unit will depend with the development of each building. But generally speaking, we tend to see restrictions around 50% to 60% area median income. So it does tend to be folks more in the workforce area. But we can, when people are in a committed affordable unit, help them make up the gap with the county right. housing grant, which is something that we do. So it's workforce and lower income housing. So Arlington County putting in $70 million over 10 years in that for development of affordable housing in the area. One of the things I'm most excited about is this new state commitment, $15 million a year, a total of $150 million to develop these projects throughout the region, which is almost unprecedented in terms of partnership for the state. So we will see the development of these units.
In the big picture, Governor Northam at the press conference on Tuesday that I attended, he said that for every dollar of government investment, $6 should return in economic development. Is that a correct figure?
That is consistent with the estimates we've seen as well, and that's the other opportunity that we have. You know, Arlington has a really long and an impressive track record, I think, of being able to make savvy investments into affordable housing, whether it's housing grants or committed affordable units, and more revenue to the county, which we actually similarly project good figures in that regard, will help us do that.
And it eases the pressure to raise property taxes on residents.
That's really important as well.
Which is your principal source of income, isn't it?
It's about 50-50 historically, the split between the commercial side and the residential side. Okay. And it's what's been driving our big budget gap, actually, is these high office vacancies. So, Anna, we hear you. We want you to be able to stay in the community as well. And we're looking to make sure that we are creating and protecting units that are affordable to you at your salary level.
We're talking with Katie Crystal. She is chair of the Arlington County Board. On to Tom Sherwood's favorite topic, traffic congestion. Would you tell your constituents who are worried about that, not just on roads, but on mass transit as well? Marcus tweeted, if the guests could have three transportation project wishes granted, what would they be and why?
Three projects granted. So one of them we hope will be realized with this, which is the second station entrance in Crystal City, which is going to be really exciting because it's going to connect more people to a line that I must mention has capacity for more riders. That's the really important thing and the really exciting thing.
Also, the second station entrance in Alexandria.
Is fantastic as well. You know, the blue and yellow line, we've actually seen a decrease by about 30% of entrances and exits to that Crystal City, Pentagon City metro station over the last 10 years. This is a system that, as our office occupants has declined in Crystal City, has really been hurting for riders. So there is a lot of potential to get more people on the metro. Having that second station entrance is going to help them do it. I would also suggest this is a bigger ticket item, but one that we've been talking about as a region, is looking to improve capacity across the Long Bridge, which, of course, brings people not only on Amtrak, but on the Virginia Railway Express, which, as we think about people who are going to choose to live in Fairfax County or Prince William County or even far south as Fredericksburg, the option that is going to allow them to be able to come to commute jobs in Crystal City without bringing more single occupancy vehicles is going to be the Virginia Railway Express, and so the Long Bridge is a big piece of that. To the extent I have other items on my wish list, it might be improving the kind of congestion point or the choke point at the Roslyn Tunnel to allow us to accommodate more Orange Line riders, not immediately germane to Crystal City, but it's going to be one of the biggest things we need for Metro's future.
Well, yes, a tunnel under the would be good.
Yeah.
And speaking of transportation, Barry tweets, wouldn't the 300-yard walkway to airport be a good place for electric scooter rentals or something similar?
That is a terrific question. Two of our hot topics colliding into one right
exactly
now.
Right.
I do think, I'm just trying to picture people with baggage and other kinds of things. But an overall question again. This is obviously a state and local government operation with Amazon. How much of this redevelopment is in Arlington's hands as opposed to the state telling you what to do?
That's a great query. I think one of the things that's really exciting about this development is that it represents an amazing partnership between our staff and the state staff and then the political leadership. It's been hand in glove throughout, and along with Alexandria, our partners in
but
Alexandria
the ultimate
too.
Authority, if, say, the legislature gets mad at Arlington because everything is a Dillon rule in Virginia, if the state wants to do something, Amazon, with its power, could go to the state and overrule something Arlington itself wants to do.
It's an interesting question. I think the answer might vary a little bit. If you're talking about a governance issue, for example, you're absolutely right that we only have the enabling authorities as explicitly granted to us by the state, and so we do.
That's the Dillon rule, right?
Yes, indeed. With regard to infrastructure projects, though, it is hard for me to imagine a major infrastructure project going forward without our partnership. We have to have our shoulder to the wheel, rowing in the same direction, whatever metaphor you want to use, both because of the resources and then the permitting, the right of way, et cetera. I think it'd be very hard for that to be done over the objections of the host community.
Patricia emails, will Amazon pay real estate taxes? If so, where will the incremental revenue go?
Great question, Patricia. So we do anticipate that the reason I think this is good for Arlingtonians on balance is the significant revenues that will come in through real estate taxes, which is our primary source of revenue, as Tom was just suggesting. Our estimate suggests something on the order of about $315 or $16 million over the time horizon of this project in property taxes. And that's so important because, again, that helps us deliver a high quality of services while keeping the burden on residents lower. There's a kind of an interesting question about who's going to stroke that check for the property taxes, and that has to do with the ownership of the property. But as renters, for example, know, the burden of paying property taxes is very much shared between the property owner and the tenant. So Amazon will indeed be paying taxes. They'll pay the other taxes, too, that are levied on businesses in Arlington County. So we do anticipate them to be a healthy member of our tax-paying corporate community.
Michelle tweets, is this affordable housing money really new or just an earmark of what Arlington typically spends already?
Absolutely. So the money from the state is new, which is exciting. We took pains to commit in our local package to very few things that were not already in our long-range plans. We thought that was important because we didn't want the mitigating of the impacts to Amazon to displace priorities made elsewhere around the county, my neighborhood of Columbia Pike, for example. And so we have not committed new monies. It is certainly my hope, speaking as one member of the board, and I think it would be fair to say that the commitments of at least a majority of my colleagues, that as our tax base grows, we will have the opportunity to dedicate more money to the Affordable Housing Investment Fund to realize new commitments. But at this time, rather than displace other projects, that what's baked into the package is existing money from Arlington, but again, married with new money from the state.
And the various tax breaks and incentives that the state and county is offering, they are graduated. They're not all up front. There's not a possibility like Walmart did in the district where it said it was going to build five or six stores and then it only built the ones it wanted to build and just jettisoned the other ones. These tax breaks increase over the years as Amazon delivers.
Yes, that's an accurate description of the state's package. I would just caveat that slightly to say there are no tax breaks being offered by Arlington County. Okay. There is a grant on the table, but in order to achieve that grant, which is an increment of any growth in our hotel tax, i.e. what out-of-town visitors to Arlington are paying in on their hotel stays, that grant is absolutely conditioned on the achievement of performance metrics achieved over time, how many people they bring, how much square footage they occupy.
I have one more. The Amazon is competing for this $10 billion contract to redo the whole Pentagon cloud computing.
Yeah, we've heard about that. That's been a little bit on our radar, yeah.
Okay, I'm just wondering if they do that, that could add even more fuel to their development in Crystal City.
That's an interesting question. Yeah. I think there's a lot of speculation, both in terms of Amazon's growth path, but also the companies that might be attracted to come join and be part of our tech ecosystem. I think we'll sort of take those things on a case-by-case basis. One of the things I can say is our excellent economic development team, Victor Hoskins, Christina Nguyen, are really, I think Victor used the word parsimonious the other day. I loved it. In terms of the number of deals or locations in Arlington that they have been willing to even offer incentives to even bring to us on the county board to consider incentives. So I think as Amazon looks to grow, as others may seek to come in, we would broadcast the message that generally the packages we're going to be offering have to do with the assets Arlington County has to offer rather than cash.
As Arlington County Board Chair, I'm just curious, how much sooner did you know that Amazon HQ2 was going to be coming to Arlington County split in half than we and the rest of the public found out?
In terms of the final decision, I would say I probably had about 8 hours of advance notice before the rest of the public. We were, you know, I think we've known for a long time that we would be very competitive and that the site selections were narrowing. But the final determination, we found out the, I want to say around 3 o'clock the afternoon before the announcement. And at that point, due to the tenacity of some of the region's reporters, it was widely in the public knowledge. So
by that time, 8 hours before, did you already know for sure that Amazon was going to be looking at two headquarters and that one of them might
be
in Arlington?
Yes. At that time, that 8 hours advance notice we did, that idea started to percolate with from the economic development team, who, again, have been our kind of lead discussers. So they started to share that with the board probably a matter of months ago, that one of the things Amazon might be considering was splitting the two headquarters.
Has anything been signed?
No. And that's been...
See, I thought that was interesting. They made the announcement on Tuesday, and to great applause, but I don't think anything is signed yet, right?
Certainly not with Arlington County, and that's been a strong belief that my colleagues and I have had. We were not going to sign even anything like a memorandum of understanding. You know, we believe that there should be a public hearing on this deal. Again, most of our package is things that actually have already been voted on in our capital improvement plan, our affordable housing master plan, but certainly the grant in particular. We've been aware of it. I think it's on balance something that I would argue is consistent with our values and consistent with the value of this project to Arlington, but we have not agreed to it, and we won't agree to it until after a public hearing and a public vote.
I hope you get to the human scale that would make Crystal City National Landing a place where people can thrive in their personal lives.
How much do you see Crystal City changing, and how much change might be too much?
I think for people who are interested in envisioning what the future of Crystal City will look like, I would really encourage them to take a look at our Crystal City sector plan. Again, this was a document that the community came together to create in anticipation of the consequences of base realignment and closure. And it really, you know, they're illustrated renderings of what we're envisioning in terms of the different buildings, but most importantly, in terms of the human scale infrastructure that Tom's talking about. The parks, the plazas for farmers markets, the way the sidewalks will look, the way the street trees will look. I think these are going to be changes that will really be welcomed, and from my conversations with residents and activists in Crystal City, are consistent with, you know, what we've really been clamoring for, and frankly, what we've not had the resources on the public sector side alone to achieve.
I'd looked at the JBG video, a 3-minute video of taking you up and down several streets, and I realized it was only a video and its concept, but it all looked the same to me. It looked like a big shopping mall where they took the roof off. So I'm hoping that there will be some character and texture, and you have a better chance maybe than what Tyson's is doing, formerly known as Tyson's Corners, now just Tyson's. They're trying to make that human scale too, and it's very difficult.
I think it's hard to overstate the importance of walkability. We've talked a lot with our state partners, and I know this has been a priority for Amazon too. When we talk about, you know, bringing Route 1 to grade, that sounds so wonky, but what that basically means, and I can tell you as a former Crystal City resident, it feels like, you know, crossing the Rubicon to get from Crystal to Pentagon.
The district did that on South Capitol Street for where the new bridge is going to go. They lowered the bridge by 20 feet or something, and made it a boulevard where people can walk.
That's absolutely right. And I think there are a few things that you could do that would make it more inviting, more human scale, encourage
bars.
People to get out on more bars.
Strip clubs.
Do you have one of those in the Crystal City community?
I know, exactly right. We're almost out of time, but an email from Elaine Scherstom concerns, if there is more operating support for Metro, that's fine, but walkway, not good for those who are limited in mobility and or have luggage to deal with or children and need car drop-off. Your guest certainty is worrisome. You're going to run into a lot of skeptics, you know.
About that bridge. I think that's
absolutely
fair.
About the whole project.
Oh, going to run into skeptics? We have a lot of skeptics, and I think that's right. Arlington County is an incredibly highly educated community, very sophisticated, and very quick to remind us exactly as Elaine is doing, about our values of inclusiveness need to show up in the designs of infrastructure projects, sidewalks, roadways, etc. I don't mean to reflect a tremendous amount of certainty one way or another about the design of this project, because it's in such a preliminary phase. I mean, this has gone from a twinkle in the eye, our long-run aspiration, very fast.
Here's
so we have a lot
solution.
Of design questions still ahead.
You can make it a gondola.
That's what I was thinking of earlier, as a matter of fact. Katie Crystal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're not running for anything next year, are you?
I am up for re-election next year.
Oh, you are?
So, yeah. I was glad to hear you say that it's going to be a highly engaged, high turnout election. I hope voters make that
Although sound. At some point, people are going to be exhausted. I mean, every year you have an election in Virginia. It's just exhausting.
Katie Crystal is chair of the Arlington County Board. She is a Democrat. Again, thank you for joining
us. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Up next, Carl Racine, Attorney General for the District of Columbia. You can start your calls for him right now. Tom Sherwood, the D.C. Council seemed at first really interested in lowering the voting age in Washington from 18 to 16, even in federal elections, not just in local elections, as has occurred in some jurisdictions in this region. And then they apparently decided essentially to table the bill. Why do you think that is?
You know, Councilmember Trayon White and at-large councilman from Ward 8 and at-large councilmember Anita Bonds both signed on to the legislation and then voted against it. I think our next guest may have some better understanding of what the legalities are of lowering to 16 voting for federal elections. But they marched right up to the gate and then turned around and said they would think about it some more.
Our guest is Carl Racine. He is the Attorney General for the District of Columbia. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to see you, Kojo. Good to be with you, Tom.
And yesterday when we had your turn, just about all of the callers who called in on that issue approved of giving the vote to 16-year-olds. How do you feel, Carl Racine?
I'm an ardent supporter of giving the vote to 16-year-olds. I really believe that what we've seen over the last few years with the leadership, particularly around gun violence, that young people have taken the lead and taken the march even further than adults have. And what I see in the District of Columbia around, you know, violence and interaction with young people is that they have good common sense ideas as to what is bedeviling the city. They want to participate. Why not have our city be one of the first to allow 16-year-olds to join the important civic obligation of participating in elections?
Do you have any sense of why the council marched up to the gate and then turned around? You have any sense of that? Did you?
You know, I really do not have a sense of that. I think it was clearly a close call. That's sort of not my business at the end of the day.
Well, speaking of your business, I the politics of this being the politics hour, the election, you were not opposed in the— Did you have an independent?
I actually did.
I had a
libertarian opponent.
Person. Right.
And you got a gazillion
votes. You got 192,000 votes, which is more than anybody. The mayor was like number four on the list of who got the most votes, the chairman, Congresswoman Ellen Holmes Norton. But you, in addition to your running your own race, you decided not to run for mayor. You ran for re-election. But in the case, in the very controversial maybe campaign between Dion Reeder and Alyssa Silverman and all the noise around that election, you endorsed Alyssa Silverman. I think you also endorsed Charles Allen in Ward 6. I'm not sure who else you may have endorsed, but specifically on Alyssa Silverman, how did you see that affecting the city and playing that election? I know you wanted her to win re-election, but the disquiet of the mayor getting involved personally, trying to defeat Alyssa Silverman, the anti-Semitism stuff around some of her supporters, but not Dion Reeder herself, just some of her supporters. It was uncomfortable period of time in our city.
Why'd you jump in?
Yeah. Well, I jumped in many, many months ago, Kojo. I think the first time I articulated my preference for at-large council member Alyssa Silverman was around May or June. And to be honest, while I was familiar with Dion's background, I had never met her. But I did meet her since the time that I endorsed Alyssa. And I'm a fan of Dion Ritter's. The fact of the matter is, I think Alyssa's done a tremendous job as a council member. Let me just tick off the reasons. Number one, you know, she's been incredibly supportive of the Independent Office of Attorney General. You remember there was a time when our very independence was in question.
The mayor tried to take it all away.
You know, we worked that out. And people like Alyssa, you know, were stalwarts as supporters for the Office of Attorney General. We've also worked together really well on legislation, including changing the way that the city enforces wage theft, giving more authority to the Office of Attorney General. And as you know, Tom, we've been bringing wage theft case after wage theft case. And lastly, I think a lot of residents don't know that Alyssa Silverman is a strong and consistent advocate of young people in the District of Columbia. Some of the programs that have really allowed us to be a progressive criminal justice office, you know, really supporting young people, have been championed by her. You know, it was never really in doubt for me as to who I would support. With regard to, you know, some of the, you know, turns and twists of that campaign, you know, I've learned that campaigns can get ugly. And as you correctly noted, sometimes the ugliness occurs not really from the voice of the candidate, but others. I'm happy that that campaign is over, and I'm happy now that we can all focus on healing the city.
The council on which Alyssa Silverman sits voted, I think, unanimously almost to, but you can't vote almost unanimously. Was the vote on Airbnb unanimous?
One of the votes was, yeah, I think the final vote was, yes.
And it's some of the more strict home sharing regulations like Airbnb around the country. Airbnb is very upset about it. When we had your turn yesterday, all of the callers who called in on that issue were opposed to it. One even suggested that there should be an initiative on the ballot, even though I can't imagine how confusing that initiative would look like. But what is your view about how the council voted?
You know, I think it is a tough law. It's certainly restrictive as regards Airbnb and homeowners who would seek to let their properties out on the platform. What's important, I think, is for us to really do a deep dig into the data and have a better understanding of what the impact of Airbnb and other platforms like that are on affordable housing. Hopefully, during the next year or two, we'll be able to really study the data. And then to the extent that refinements on the legislation need to be made, they'll be made. I think you noted that Airbnb has discussed potentially going the referendum route. That, of course, would be interesting.
You could also say some people have used the concern about housing, make a person who wants to rent out day by day a property doesn't make it available for someone to rent. I understand that. But also people thought that this was like the hotel lobby, hotel industry, which is quite large in this city in terms of its political influence and its business impact, saying we don't want Airbnb to have unfettered access to our city because it affects our businesses. How much of a role did that play?
I think it was significant. And Tom, what you had was you had two allies that sometimes are not allies. You had the hospitality industry as well as organized labor really joining forces.
It's their jobs, yes.
Exactly, you know, on this legislation. You know, again, I think what's important is that we study the impact that Airbnb and other platforms have on affordable housing. I do want to touch on the point you made. And the Office of Attorney General has been quite aggressive in regards to enforcing the housing rules against folks who use Airbnb-type models on rent-controlled buildings.
Right.
Using
all of them. Now, but this law does not take effect until October of next year, which there will be a regulatory scheme put in place. I think it's going to be under DCRA, but a different – I'm not sure DCRA does its own job very well, that you add additional influence there. Will the Attorney General's office be involved in any way other than just enforcing the law?
You know, at this point, I don't really not seen discussion around giving the Attorney General's office regulatory enforcement on these issues. You know, we're always happy to play a helpful role. I think we're probably better off focusing on the rent control buildings or the landlords who are not telling other tenants that, sure enough, their neighbors may be Airbnb-type tenants. I think we'd rather stay in that area.
Last time you were here, you said your office was considering a probe of Catholic Church abuses in the district, as well as inviting victims of abuse to report to your office. Just last week, a D.C. priest was arrested on charges of child sex abuse. Was that arrest at all connected to the probe?
You know, I'm not really able to comment on that. What I can tell you
means
is
yes,
that,
but go ahead.
true to form, you know, we did establish a website, and the website is www.reportclergyabusetodcoag.com. We have received a number of complaints and other commentary to the extent that any of the information we receive rises to the level of a potential, you know, criminal matter, we refer that to the MPD as well as to the U.S. Attorney's Office.
I was going to ask about that because the district has an unusual status in that felony criminal cases are typically investigated, prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office. So why did you as a district official decide to initiate a probe into local Catholic Church abuses?
Well, I think it's incredibly important for the Office of Attorney General to step up and play a role and protect young people, vulnerable people. We have authority under the Not-for-Profit Act to regulate, investigate, and enforce violations of the act. Every not-for-profit organization in the District of Columbia must be following a valid public purpose. Clearly, any cover-up of sex abuse is not a valid public purpose. So we're using that authority to make sure that the Catholic Church is doing the right thing. You'll remember a few weeks ago, the Catholic Church revealed that it had an internal process and that over a matter of decades, something like three or four dozen clergy were suspended or otherwise taken out of the church. I think it's our job to not just trust, but also to verify. And that's what our investigation is doing.
When you were here that day, you spoke also both as Attorney General, but also as a practicing Catholic. And I just wonder what you think about it now. Archbishop Wuerl, the Pope has accepted his retirement resignation. Cardinal McCarrick, beforehand, his career and his has all been in tatters now. I mean, people worry about the future of the Catholic Church and the. Just this week, the Pope held up a Catholic bishops in the United States move to strike out new ground on how this would be approached and delayed it till sometime next year. But as a Catholic person, just what personally are you feeling these days as your church goes through all this?
Sure. Well, I certainly welcome the change. I think change in leadership is hard, but in this case is necessary. I was disappointed in the activities in Baltimore. I think the bishops were prepared to go a necessary route to allow lay people into the process to ensure that there was greater transparency, and the Vatican put that on pause. The more the Catholic Church resists change, I think the more it is likely that longstanding Catholics move away from it.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops concluded a three-day meeting in Baltimore this week, but not before a lawsuit was filed Tuesday in Washington on behalf of six victims of priest sex abuse. Both the Pope and the conference were named as defendants in that lawsuit, which alleges the top church officials protected clergy at children's expense, creating a culture in which rape and sex abuse are, quoting here, endemic, systemic, rampant, and pervasive. What do you think a class action could do to bring justice to victims of priest sex abuse? What's the hope here?
Well, I think the class action has several purposes. One is to uncover the truth. The truth in many ways can be the Catholic Church's salvation. But I think, people need more facts. So that certainly is one aspect of the suit. Most importantly, to the extent that there are victims out there who are still suffering, it's incredibly important for the church to provide the resources that would allow for treatment and recovery. I understand that suit has that purpose as well. I'm supportive of the action.
Here is Eric in Washington. Eric, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. Attorney General Racine, you stated that you're in favor of expanding the political process by allowing 16-year-olds to vote, but you introduced and are supporting legislation that will restrict small business owners in D.C., registered lobbyists, and others who may have interests, including nonprofits, with the government, from being fully active in the political process, which is somewhat problematic considering that you took donations from these same folks when you first ran before and after your campaign. Would you like to explain?
Oh, sure. And I appreciate the call there. You're making the point that my position and the office's position is to really, really clamp down further on campaign finance legislation. We think that PACs should be narrowed and limited. We also think that there should be more anti-pay-to-play restrictions that would apply not only to the council and to the mayor, but also to the Office of Attorney General. So I don't think that my public position is inconsistent at all.
I want to ask you, right after the elections, which the Democrats have done very well nationally, and Eleanor Holmes Norton now will be able to chair a subcommittee that oversees infrastructure and metro. Could be very good there. But when the mayor held her news conference about the election, she talked about the marijuana law. Because of efforts by Andy Harris of Maryland, the city has been unable to implement any kind of regulatory scheme to regulate marijuana sales and collect taxes, which could be a huge addition to the city's revenue. Some people are saying that the federal law that was passed by Congress bars the city from even considering taking actions, because that's what the law says. Where are you on what the city can? Have you advised the mayor in any way about what the mayor can do going forward to enact some kind of scheme of regulatory stuff for marijuana? David Grosso says, hell with Congress, do it anyway.
Yeah, I think we have to be mindful of the restrictions that have been imposed, even if we disagree with them. And as you noted, Tom, the restriction is still in place that precludes the district from spending its resources to establish a regulatory regime. I think what the mayor was saying, and I agree with her, is that once the Democrats get installed, we should get that restriction lifted and go about in a responsible way to impose reasonable regulation, including taxes on marijuana. It's important to do that because, as you know now, we're largely operating in a world of fiction,
right,
where you know the law assumes that users recreationally are only using products that they're growing in their home. We know that's not the case.
All you have to do is walk the streets of the city to know that's not true.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's, to be honest with you, it's not only just to walk in the streets, but there are all kinds of, you know, stores popping up, and neighbors are concerned that people are engaged in unlawful sales. And it's putting law enforcement in, I think, an untenable situation. And so regulating the use of marijuana and the sale of marijuana is important. And I think we should do it as soon as Congress lifts that restriction.
You have gone after slumlords in the district, suing the owners and operators of more than 800 apartment units in Wards 7 and 8. But here's this email we got from Tim. We have rented our rent control apartment since the 1970s. About 2 years ago, our landlord threw the rent adjustment process out the window by basing the annual increase on a greatly inflated paid rent. What is the district doing to enforce its rent control law? We are paying about $100 a month more than we should as a result.
Well, I would welcome that caller to reach out to the Office of Attorney General. My email is karl.racine@dc.gov so we can address that specific issue. There are issues with landlords in the District of Columbia who entice renters to sign on to leases and then really jack up the next year's lease because they consider the first year a concession. We're in a lawsuit right now against a fairly prominent landlord arguing that that concession is actually not a concession, but it serves as the base at which a rental increase should come. And we'll see where that lawsuit ends up.
This is where you get a reduced rent for maybe 2 months and substantially. But then when the year is up, your rent increase is based on a full year of a higher rent.
That's exactly right. And our lawsuit takes the position that the landlords have not been transparent in really identifying what the rent is and that a reasonable tenant assumes that the rent is the amount of money that they pay a month.
Now, also on this, the mayor has taken steps, finally, the administration, to do what's called DOPA, the ability of the city to step in and buy an apartment building if a landlord wants to sell it, to save it for the tenants, and either keep the building or turn it over to another developer who will maintain affordable rents. Do you see this as making any impact on the city's housing crisis?
I think it has the potential to have a significant impact. As you know, Mayor Barry for Life, when he was a council member, championed this legislation.
It's never been used.
But it was never funded.
Right.
And so there was never any resource to purchase the buildings. I was happy with the mayor's move.
We are running out of time very quickly. And the Washington Post, in its endorsement of you for Attorney General, said that, quoting here, that Mr. Racine decided against challenging Mayor Muriel Ebauza, despite encouragement from some of the mayor's critics, shows his commendable commitment to solidifying the credibility of his office and the importance of the work he has begun. Nevertheless, we got an email from Adam saying, Racine for mayor, Kojo, ask him about that. So given these glowing editorials about you, when you run for mayor, how much will we find out about the real Carl Racine? What kind of dirt will we find out about you when you finally run for mayor?
Is that an email or is that your question?
That was my question.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm a public official now as Attorney General. And so in a real way, you know, my life, warts and all, is an open book. If anybody cares to do detailed research, they'll find a very imperfect individual who's deeply committed to the District of Columbia and is committed to building a world-class office of Attorney General.
You don't get tired, I'm sure, of people saying you should be mayor or should run for mayor. You chose not to this time. But you take office, I think, on January the 2nd for your second term. Within 2 years, you'll have to start preparing to run for mayor. So will we know in about 2 years, in 2020, that whether you're going to run for mayor in 2022?
I think your question and other people's questions will become far more relevant in 2 years. I can tell you that I'm going to take not only the first 2 years, but all 4 years to continue to build a strong office of Attorney General.
Carl Racine, he is the Attorney General for the District of Columbia, re-elected to that position last week. He's a Democrat. Congratulations and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kojo. Good to see you, Tom.
Today's Politics Hour was produced by Julie Deppenbrock. In case you missed it, we hosted a town hall-style discussion of the local opioids crisis in Anne Arundel County last month. As a follow-up, we talked with a mother who shared her experience of losing her daughter to a fentanyl overdose. You can find her story at kojoshow.org/blog. Coming up Monday, what does Thanksgiving mean for local Native American tribes? That's Monday at noon. Until then, thank you for listening and have a great weekend. Tom Sherwood, what do you plan on doing with yours?
Oh, I don't know yet. I'll decide this afternoon.
I've never heard you say before that you had no plans at all.
I have some friends out of town, and we're going to do it. Not sure what we're going to do.
Man has too much time on his hands. Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nambi.
The Kojo Nambi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, Margaret Barthel, and Lauren Marco. Our managing producer is Ingelisa Schroepsdorf. Our intern is Talia Drayton. Our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, go to kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Nambi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.